Welcome to Popular Cultural Cherry. My name is Lawin and I am your host. In this podcast, we give you an outsider's perspective about European life, culture, and pretty much anything that is connected to this continent. So get ready to learn something new in a light and entertaining way. Welcome back everyone to Popular Cultural Cherry. This week's episode, we have with us again, David Nguyen. Last episode, he spoke about him pursuing the Asian American dream in Europe. So currently he's based in Amsterdam, but is originally from San Francisco, born to immigrant parents from China. One thing he kind of introduced last episode was his love for hiking. And I thought it would be, you know, cool to have him back again in our show to talk about his experience doing the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain. So again, let's go straight into the interview. So David, you're back again with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to see you, Lawin.
Good to see you again after 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks. Can't believe it.
It's only been 2 weeks. I invited David today to talk about his journey along the Camino de Santiago, which is one of the biggest Christian pilgrimages that you can do. And David did it 2 years ago. And he actually posted a video of this Camino on his YouTube channel, and which garnered like 900,000 views, if I'm not mistaken. So he has a pretty big video on YouTube.
It's like one big video, but that really sparked everything, right? So
David, yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what the Camino is and what did you know about it before you went there? What is the Camino for people who don't know?
Yeah, so the Camino de Santiago, it's a pilgrimage that has been around for centuries now. And essentially, it's a pilgrimage that starts in many locations, but it ends up in Santiago, Spain. And so the one that I did, the Camino Frances, the most popular one, it starts in a small town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France. And it's 500 miles, 800 kilometers up northern Spain until you get to Santiago, Spain.
Before we were speaking now, I kind of shortly looked at Wikipedia, of course, to get a general overview of what the Camino is. And I found out that actually it's one of the three biggest Christian pilgrimages in the world. One is going to Rome. One is going to Jerusalem. Obviously, those two make sense. And this is the third one. So the Camino de Santiago supposedly is supposed to be something that's very important to Christians. Actually, I myself, I'm Catholic, although I don't practice anymore. I'm still Catholic because I pay a certain tax in Germany. So every month I pay a part of my salary is taken away by the church. So technically I am a Catholic. But yeah, so it was interesting to know this. I didn't know this actually, that it's that big of a pilgrimage. And you're mentioning like people do it for different reasons. So the first time I heard about it was actually from my uncle who did it twice. I don't know his exact reason why he did it, but you know, I was reading people do it for whatever enlightenment, people do it to atone for their sins. But historically it was more about this Saint James or Santiago in Spanish. He's actually buried in Santiago de Compostela, which is that city in Spain. I think they brought his body by foot or something like this. And this is the kind of the Saint James way that people kind of follow. But nowadays, like, there's a lot of routes, and I actually looked it up, and 2017, there between 200,000 to 300,000 people who did it in a year. That's crazy. This 500, 800 kilometers, this is just one path, right? There are several paths.
Yeah, there's many different paths that lead and end up in Santiago, Spain. There's another one that starts in Portugal. There's one that's like the northern routes. And there's many different ways. And even in the Netherlands, there are points where you can start here. And towns where you can see the shell, the Camino shell. And when I was in Bremen last week, I actually found a place that was a stop for the Camino de Santiago. So there's many different paths. The Camino Frances, the one that I did, that's just the most popular one.
But that's crazy, starting from Bremen all the way. Bremen is in Germany, in the middle of Germany, actually northern middle of Germany, and then all the way to Spain. I can't imagine walking that. That must be gruesome, man.
Yeah, you meet people who start from places like in Germany or in Belgium, and they walk way further than the 500 miles or 800 kilometers. I mean, for us, it's like, it was a long distance, right? 30 days, 500 miles, 800 kilometers. But some people start in places like Germany or Belgium. And yeah, you can really start anywhere.
Actually, if you play your cards right, you could even start from anywhere in Southeast Asia or in China. Because you could, like, technically, like, I don't know how many years it would take you to do that, but technically it's possible.
Yeah, technically it is possible, right? You can start from anywhere, and it's essentially a pilgrimage away with that leads you to the end point. And really, the end point, it's a big thing for many people, right? Like you said, St. James was buried there. And when people get to Santiago, that's actually a big moment for a lot of people for religious reasons. But for many people, it's the experience of walking along the way to get to Santiago. That's really the experience. When you talk about enlightenment, self-awareness, much of that comes when you walk the experience, really the journey instead of the endpoint.
Right. That's what people say, right? It's more about the journey than the destination. Going back to your point about St. James, sorry, I just forgot this specific detail. I don't know if you're aware of it, but I also looked up, I was curious, who is St. James? Why is he such an important person? Apparently, St. James is actually James, one of the disciples, apostles of Jesus. I didn't know. And apparently he's buried there. So that makes it a much bigger deal for me as a Catholic, well, born Catholic person to do it eventually. But maybe you can tell us what made you do it.
Yeah, so I'll take a step back and I'll tell you how I first learned about the Camino de Santiago. I studied abroad in Spain the summer of 2010. And at that time, I had a childhood friend that was visiting Spain. And when I met up with her, she told me she was doing this walk. At that time, I didn't really realize what it was, but she was doing a walk from, I believe, Sarria to Santiago. And many people start at different points. Sarria is actually a very popular point. It's the midway point of the Camino Frances. And she was telling me she was doing this Camino. I didn't really know what it was, but it stuck in the back of my head. And so later on, I reread one of my favorite books, The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. And I didn't know this at the time. I read it the first time, but the book, The Alchemist, was actually inspired by the Camino de Santiago. The main character's name is Santiago. And so somehow the idea to walk the Camino came back. I don't know why or how, but the idea came back when I moved to the Netherlands to study abroad in Maastricht to do my master's. And I told myself it would be a good opportunity to walk this after my program. And so that's one reason. I heard about it back in 2010. And then the second reason actually came during the first few days in Maastricht, when I got a text from a friend of mine saying that one of my good friends, one of my best friends, had passed away. That was a really big shock for me. At the time, I didn't really know how to process this. I just moved to a new country. I just chatted with him a few days before. And so that's how I started off my year. But essentially, I also knew I wanted to walk, or I needed to walk this, because I needed the time to grieve as well. So somehow the dots connected. And after my year in Maastricht, I needed the time alone to really self-reflect, to think about life. Also, looking back, I needed the time to really process and to ultimately grieve. And so I knew I needed to walk the Camino de Santiago after my 1 year in Maastricht.
And did it actually help you kind of reach all those objectives that you had by walking the Camino? Like, when you actually did it, were you able to kind of fulfill, you know, that you grieving probably after uni, you're always kind of like in the crossroads, so you kind of wanna find yourself, maybe discover yourself and see where you want to go or what you want to do next?
I mean, initially I knew about the Camino, and my initial reason was I wanted to walk because, oh, I'm changing countries, I'm changing my life, this would be a good opportunity to reflect on next steps. Then with my friend passing, it just added another reason, a bigger reason for me to walk it. And I didn't really know what to expect, but I knew I needed time for myself. No, during the year in Maastricht, when you're doing your master's program, it's really busy. You're just focused on studying. And I didn't really have the time. I also didn't tell anyone except a few close friends. I didn't know who to talk to because you move to a new country. You're not going to tell this to these new friends. And so when I started walking, I met people from all walks of life, many countries with different stories, many people who had similar stories of family members, loved ones who passed away, a lot of people who were stuck in life, who were trying to figure out their next steps. And by the end of it, I could say that it was extremely helpful for me to have the time to reflect, but also not self-reflect, but to reflect with other people. In a way, it was also group therapy, when you could talk to people about these really deep conversations, these deep topics. It helped me grieve. That's what I wanted, the time, but also what I didn't expect was that I would heal through people sharing their stories and me sharing my own story as well.
So the healing and the self-actualization happens more because of like the social aspect of the whole walk, or does actually just walking long distances in the beautiful countryside of Spain also help in that process?
Yeah, it's a mix of both. And I think that's, for me, that was the beautiful thing about the Camino, because there's a beauty in just walking and not really doing much except walking, being more present. And it's hard to describe, but when you have so much time to yourself and you're just walking, a lot of thoughts come out. And it's one of the most effective ways for me to really heal, by walking and just observing my thoughts and to think. That's one. The other one is actually when you meet people, you walk with them at times as well. And when you share stories, right, you hear about their story, you share your story, it's like talk therapy in a way. And it's really helpful because you realize that you're not alone, that in this world, everyone's going through problem. It's just really nice to talk it out. And also when you get to each destination, you meet people as well. Sometimes at the dinner table, you have fun conversations, also deep conversations. I remember one night, this is probably day 3 or 4. We were at the dinner table and we went around the table sharing our stories, why we decided to walk the Camino. And everyone had a different story, but everyone had a reason to walk. I was sharing my story about changing countries, also my friend passing. Others were sharing stories about how they survived cancer. Some people shared stories about breakups. Some people were unsure what they wanted to do next in life. Everyone had a different story to tell and to share. And I think what was really nice about it was you realize that you're not alone in life, because many times it's very easy for us to feel like we're alone going through something. That was one big lesson I learned from the Camino, the power of community, that as a human race, we're all connected in some way. We might look different, we might come from different countries, but many of us share common problems and common dreams as well.
You know, because of your story, it kind of got me imagining things. I think because of like how socialization kind of changed with technology, this, you know, sitting on the table with random people just talking very deeply, it changed with, you know, with WhatsApp, with Facebook, with Instagram. And sometimes like those are the kind of conversations that really hit home. Those are the kind of conversations that are very, very memorable, because you can chat with strangers on Instagram about your feelings or whatever, but it's not as strong as like these kind of fireside conversations you'd have around the campsite or in a random hostel in the middle of nowhere.
And I think that's really the beautiful thing about this Camino experience, because in 30 days I was able to make meaningful connections that I still keep in touch with. I visited a friend in Bremen last weekend, right? And I went to visit a friend in Italy last summer. When I was back home in the US, I visited my friend in Seattle, Washington. And that's the really beautiful thing. You make these really deep connections with people in a matter of a few weeks, a month, because you really go deep. Nothing is surface level. On the Camino, everything is deep and you go deep, whether it's within yourself or with other people. And that's what really builds connection.
So these guys you're telling me you met in Bremen in the US, all of these, you just met them through the Camino?
Yeah, we were just walking, and some of them I met for a few days. Some I walked the entire 30 days, some 2 weeks. But that's really the beautiful thing. You meet people, you stay in touch. And because the connections you built were so deep, we've maintained contact. And I think that's really the difference between what you said about social media nowadays. Everything's very surface level. But on the Camino, you go really deep. And you talk about your fears, your dreams, your problems, your secrets. There's so much stuff that happens on the Camino. But that's the stuff that really builds real connection.
I want to go back a bit. I just want to understand. Maybe you could take us through like what a typical day during the Camino looks like. So maybe like how many hours are you actually walking? What kind of places are you staying? What kind of food are you actually eating? These kind of like logistical questions.
A typical day looks like you usually stay at a place like an albergue, which is a hostel for pilgrims or walkers. And you wake up, hopefully you've had a good night of sleep because there's a lot of snorers, you know, in hostels. And so that's a challenge. But a day would look like I would wake up around 6 to 6:30, and breakfast would be around 7. We would go either as a group or by myself, get a cafe con leche, a coffee with milk, maybe a croissant or a potato omelet or bread, something easy and quick. And then by 7:15, we were on the road and we would walk a few hours and then stop at the next cafe for another cafe con leche, walk for a few more hours for lunch. And lunch would be something simple. It could be a bocadillo, a sandwich, something simple. It was always usually something simple because afterwards you would walk again for another few hours. And I would get at my final destination around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So essentially you're walking from 7 in the morning until around 3 in the afternoon, depending on how far you go. But most days it was from 7 to 3 o'clock. And that would be around how many kilometers? I would say around 20 to 25 kilometers per day, 7 to 3 p.m. in the afternoon. That's like a typical day.
Sounds like a long day. Every day is a long day.
It's every day is a long and very memorable day, and it's a very simple thing, right? You go to sleep around, I didn't say anything about after 3 p.m., but after 3 o'clock, I would have a beer and then maybe wash my underwear, my shirt, because I only carried 2 sets of clothing. And so it would be laundry every other day for me. And it was a simple wash. It was like washing my underwear or my t-shirt in the shower and letting it dry and having a beer with a few people as well. And then dinner would be around, I'd say, 7 o'clock or so. And for dinner, there's usually an option. There's like a pilgrim's menu that you can order at most places. And that's like a set menu. It could be a starter, like a salad, a main dish, like lamb or beef. There's always wine as well. And there's dessert as well. Sometimes it's ice cream. Sometimes it's pudding. But usually I would get the pilgrim's menu. You could order other things as well, but that's the thing I usually order, the pilgrim's menu. And then afterwards, bedtime's around 9 or 10 o'clock. Then you repeat the next day the same thing. So every day's pretty much the same thing. You go to bed, you wake up, you walk, you get some coffee, you walk some more, you get lunch, you walk some more, you're at your destination, dinner, sleep, repeat.
I'm just trying to imagine it. So these hostels you're staying at, and you said, you know, on the way you get some coffee, you get some lunch. So actually the way you're passing through is not really, it's not like in the middle of nowhere. There's like some small villages there, or it's like really made for tourism because they know this is like Camino de Santiago.
Yeah, so I walked the Camino Frances, which is the most popular Camino. And many places you're in the middle of nowhere, but you're never in the middle of nowhere for too long because you go by towns, the Spanish towns. And that's also the beautiful experience about the Camino, because on day one, you go up the Pyrenees, and that's probably the most scenic day. And then afterwards, you're going through Spanish towns. You'll go into some big cities as well, but most of the time, you're going through Spanish towns. So you're never really alone. You're always going to pass through towns or cities along the way up until Santiago.
Yeah, like you said, small towns, does it enter into forests, or does it, like, sometimes is it very inclined, like you have like very steep kind of hills and mountains you have to cross?
Yeah, so on the Camino Francés day one, you're going from Saint John Pied de Port up the Pyrenees and down into Roncesvalles and then into Spain. And that's really the hardest part of the Camino on day one. But on the other days, it could be flat, there could be hills. But essentially, day one's the most difficult when it comes to elevation. But afterwards, it's a mix of flatlands, hills, going into small towns, going into cities like Pamplona. So it's a mix. It's a mix.
Sounds beautiful, man. What do you actually find the most challenging part of it? So you mentioned that first day with the incline was challenging, but were there any other aspects of it that you found challenging, maybe physically, but also, I don't know, emotionally or spiritually?
Oh, that's a good question. I myself didn't find day one challenging because I love hiking and I've always done a lot of hikes. But what I found the most challenging was slowing down. That's one lesson I can share. What I mean by slowing down was, especially coming from the US, my mind was always going fast and just, like, you know, speeding up and thinking about the future. And maybe this is not just the US, but in general, I was someone that was always focused on getting to a place, right? Getting to a destination. And during the first few days, I was rushing because I was trying to find a bed, because some places it's hard to find a bed. So some people make reservations, and some places you arrive to and you realize there's no bed. And so you learn to get to a certain place at a certain time. And I remember the first few days when I found out there were no beds in certain towns, I just went fast and I was speed walking. And I realized after a few days, what was I doing? I was just walking and really not being in the moment, just trying to get to the destination. But when I was doing that, I really missed all the parts of the way because my mind was focused on getting to the final destination as soon as possible to get a bed. And so for me, a big challenge was to slow down, to really enjoy the moment, because that's what I was missing, the moments of discussion with people, looking around me, because my mind was just fixated on getting a bed.
This slowing down is actually a very good point you brought up, because this is actually something that you can also apply in real life. I see this a lot also being done by especially tourists from Asia when they come to Europe. They're always like in some kind of package tour where they have to do this. They have to see Paris in one day. But, you know, Europe is so beautiful that even small towns has something to offer. And sometimes you just really need to take time, take a step back, take things slow, take in everything that you can take in at that moment. And I really like how that's one of the things that you found challenging, was because obviously you're from coming from the US, your mindset's a bit different. But hopefully that's something you're now able to apply in your life.
It's a good reminder, and it connects with mindfulness. Right. The whole slowing down thing. I remember there was this moment, and I met a friend from Mexico. Her name is Brenda, and we still remain in touch through this Camino Amigos group. And when I was walking, I was rushing, and I remember her stopping me and asking me, "Did you see the eagles?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" "The eagles flying above us, back on that hill over there." And I was like, "Wait, I didn't see any eagles. That's kind of cool. Like, where are the eagles?" But it was because my mind was so focused on getting to the destination and, like, will I have a bed? I was stressing out, like, will I have a bed? Will I have a bed? What time is it? Oh, I need to get here in 2 hours. that I really missed many of these moments. I missed the egos. And we had a talk about that. And Brenda told me, like, yeah, you know, just slow down, just enjoy it, enjoy the moment, because, you know, she's also a very spiritual and reflective person. But I remember that one instance, and that really helped me slow down, because I realized, oh, I just missed all of that, all these egos that were flying above us because I was so focused on trying to get a bed. We fixate so much on getting to that destination that really we really forget the journey.
You know, you just mentioned this, like, you know, you making friends along the way in the Camino and also like maintaining those friendships. I kind of feel like this is some kind of exclusive club that you need to like earn your right to get into, which I guess makes sense because all of you guys have experienced this. Yeah, it obviously brings you together. I'm excited to one day do it as well. Speaking of me, hopefully one day doing it. Did you actually need any kind of physical preparation?
Physical preparation. I would say yes, you do. But if you're already fit and healthy, I think you can go and do it without any training. For example, one thing that really helped me coming to the Netherlands was cycling everywhere. And that really helped get me in shape because even in Maastricht, I was cycling everywhere. I ran a lot as well. I was someone that always enjoyed walking. So that was my preparation. I didn't have a structured plan of walking 20K a day. Many people do, but I would say for me, it was staying in shape however I could, running, walking. And what helps is actually walking with your backpack as well with some weights. So I did a few days of that because it's very different when you walk without a backpack and you walk with a backpack full of clothes and everything for long periods of time. So I did some of that training, but mostly it was cycling, it was running, and it was staying in shape.
Did you lose weight after the Camino?
I did lose weight. I lost a few kilos, but I know people that lost 5, 10, 15 kilos because you're doing all this walking. You're walking 500 miles, 800 kilometers. And I actually checked my step count. It was over 1.2 million steps that you do in a matter of 30 days. So yeah, I would say most people lose weight on the Camino.
So for me, who's aspiring to do it one day, what would you say is like a typical day-to-day budget?
Yeah, I did a budget video on this, and I would say the typical budget's around 30 euros a day.
Okay.
And what makes up the 30 euros? Well, the typical cost of an albergue is around 10 euros, I would say. It's cheaper if you go to a municipal albergue, and it's more expensive if you go to a private one. But I would say the average is around 10 euros a day. And breakfast is perhaps around a few euros. A cafe con leche is anywhere between 1.5 to 2 euros. And lunch is around 3-4 euros, a sandwich. And then I might have a drink or two, which is another 2 euros. 10 euros for dinner, which is the pilgrim's menu. And altogether, it's around 30 euros per day. That was my budget.
Doable, man. It's not so bad. That's your hotel in some other places for one night. So that you can do in a day.
Yeah, that's a nice thing because it's actually really cheap because you're not buying anything except food and accommodation, and you're walking the whole day. So really your expenses are cost of living, your meals, your 5 cafe con leches, and yeah, that's it.
All right. So now from like more shallow questions, let's go to like deeper questions about the school trip of yours. Like how would you say that this school trip affect you the most? And maybe you can share with us like what was your favorite part about it?
Yeah. What were the biggest lessons that I learned? Well, there was one big one that I learned. I kept this journal. It was a gift that my friend gave me towards the end of my master's. And I took it with me on the Camino de Santiago. And I would journal. And there was one quote that I wrote a few times on the Camino. And it basically says, the people you meet shape the decisions you make, and the decisions you make shape the story of your life. So for me, a big takeaway was that really the people that you hang out with, that you surround yourself with, they really determine the quality of your life. The people that I met on the Camino, they were all very like-minded, and they added so much value to my life, even in a short span of time, the lessons that they taught me. And that was a really big lesson: community, the people, connection. Good connections, they really shape the quality of your life. And that was the big thing for me after the Camino, the power of connection, community. There's so many more, but I would say that's a big one. Another one is the importance of time as well. I think for me, what I realized from the Camino was the fact that it was only 30 days, but it felt like a whole year. The connections I made, the places I saw, the foods that I ate, it felt like such a long time. And it was only 30 days. And the question I had for myself was, how come it felt like 30 days? And how can I stretch out my life? Because there's been times in my life where I realize, wow, a whole year passed by and what happened? But in those 30 days, so many things happened. And I realized the importance of time as well, that I want to use my time wisely. How can I stretch out time in my life to fill it up with experiences, with good people, community, that would essentially make my life feel longer? That was another big lesson for me.
Two very big lessons that you shared. Obviously, both super important and both kind of like different parts of your life. One is obviously your social life, like how important it actually is to fill your life, your surroundings with people who could actually maybe add some value to your life by, you know, just maybe because of who they are or because maybe they can give you some advice or something like that. At the same time, also making the most out of your time. And that's something that during the pandemic, I think a lot of people have taken for granted, how much time you actually have per day, because you feel like, oh, nothing's happening, I can't do anything, I can't go out. But actually, you know, you realize there's a lot you can do. And thus, I have this podcast and you have your YouTube channel. Those are like byproducts of this whole time. But a lot of other people, they don't take that time. They take that time for granted. And this is the reality.
Yeah, time just goes by. And I thought about my friend a lot as well, and how time is so precious. And we're not going to be around forever. Ourselves, our family members, our friends. And sometimes I took it for granted. People, things. But time isn't forever. And so how do I make the most out of my time? How do I spend my time wisely? That was a big takeaway for me.
That's true. Well, I'm kind of going back to something I spoke about earlier, about like how social media kind of changed the whole social situation, especially when it comes to meeting new people, but actually for keeping relationships or keeping friendships ongoing. It's a pretty powerful tool. Like I can keep in touch with my mom or my friends back home in the Philippines or my friends in Amsterdam, you know, send them messages. And at this moment, if I'm here, that's the most I can do. And I think that's one of the ways that you can kind of make the most out of your time and keep also those people in your circle. Like keep those relationships ongoing.
Yeah, you bring up a good point with social media. Social media can be great, but it also can be really evil as well. It depends how you use it.
Exactly.
It can be used to connect with family members. And I'm extremely grateful for social media and for WhatsApp and video, because I can stay in touch with my parents, my family, and my friends from home, especially during COVID.
Yeah.
The other thing that I want to bring up, and we talked about this as well, it has the power to really connect you to strangers based on perhaps you sharing your story or me sharing a video.
True.
One thing that I want to add about connection, and it might sound silly, but it's not. The video I made about the Camino, I made it just to recap what we did because it was such a great experience. And my goal was to create something for my friends and family to share that experience. And that was like the first video, and somehow it blew up. But the comments people would write, and I would respond to them, it really helped build this community that really helped me solve this connection problem that I had when I was in Amsterdam during COVID, especially being alone. But somehow I still felt connected to these strangers on the internet through their comments on my video. And it was a way for me to connect with them, but also it felt really nice to be able to inspire someone else to walk the Camino because of a video on social media. And probably you're the same, right? Lawin, like you talked about how someone reached out to you to do a podcast.
Right. Yeah, totally agree, man. Pros and cons. And obviously that's one of the big pros of it. It's just like, I don't know, this effect it has on other people to inspire. I mean, you share something that's like deep, something, you know, an experience of yours that's very meaningful. You share it with other people. And obviously there will be people, yeah, they watch it. I don't care. And there will be other people who'll be really moved by it and might actually contact you, like this girl I was telling you about who I will interview for my next episode. But also like these people commenting on your video, right?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
These things that you've learned through the Camino, obviously you mentioned you're applying it to your daily life. Well, some of the friends you made during the Camino, you met them, you went to Bremen, the US and whatever. How about in terms of like you making the most out of your time right now, outside of your YouTube thing? Do you think you're actually able to apply that kind of learning you had in the Camino to your current life?
Yeah. For example, what's been challenging, especially with COVID, right? It was me moving to a new country. And then a few months later, COVID hits and being home alone. But the lessons from the Camino taught me that, okay, despite this situation, you really have to make the effort to connect with people. And so that's where social media and technology played such a big role. I was able to reach out to old friends and reconnect with them. I've actually been more in touch with my family now than I have in the past when I was living in LA and them in San Francisco. So that's another thing. It's being able to consciously connect with people. Also, there were other lessons that I learned about time and how I wanted to spend my time, especially in the workplace. Because I've come here and I've also changed careers and done a bunch of other things. But it made me think about in the workplace and also my personal life, how do I want to spend my time? Where do I want to spend my energy? Hopefully it's in doing something that I believe in that is purposeful for me. And these were things that I realized and found out during the Camino.
So that even affected your personal life. So these insights that you gained during the Camino even kind of manifested its way into your like professional life.
Yeah, I did a lot of journaling even on the Camino. But even before, I'm someone that's very reflective and I've always journaled and thought about what I wanted in my life. And the Camino was just an exclamation point of, yes, this is what really mattered. Because when you have a lot of time to yourself to think, it sort of cements these reflections that I had in the past that, yeah, this really is true. This is you. Because you have a lot of clarity in your mind to really think about what matters to you during the Camino, because you have a lot of time to yourself, a lot of time talking to other people. And so, yeah, it cemented these experiences and reflections. And so in life now, I consciously try to apply these lessons in how I want to live my life.
Awesome, man. You definitely sold the idea to me. And if there are other people out there who's listening, who's also interested in it, to begin with, I think you've already sold the idea. So as a salesman, you've already passed.
Oh, yeah, I got one.
For Spanish tourism. You're also doing them a favor.
Yeah, it's good. It's good and bad because, again, with anything, there's over-tourism, especially now with the Camino. But I actually think it's a good thing.
Right.
It helps local businesses. And I think this is a really good way. And then I would recommend this to those who are interested. A really good way for you to, one, get in shape, two, to really have time to yourself, and to really figure out certain questions in your life, these bigger questions. And again, many people do it for different reasons. Many people do it for religious reasons, and that's a reason. But also many people do it for adventure and spiritual reasons. So yeah, I would encourage anyone who's interested to take the leap and to take a walk, take a long walk.
Take an 800 kilometer walk from Pyrenees all the way to Santiago de Compostela. David, thank you so much for your time. Always nice talking to you and catching up, man.
Yeah, thanks, Lawin. Appreciate your time as well.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pop Your Cultural Cherries. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast streaming platforms. To be updated with our latest episodes, don't forget to give us a like and a follow on our Facebook page and our Instagram account.